comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
And good afternoon. It is just now turning 4 o'clock, and thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, in the first hour from the first round of the March 3rd and the Journey Continues open mic reading in that series, monthly series at the Elm Cafe. In the first round, you'll hear readings by Malcolm Cullen, Vicky Langele, Layli Jamali, Sarah Emtage, Michael Flaho, Leanne Terrace, Sonali Samaya, Meg Freer, Juno, Bruce Cudmore, Val, Leo Roberts, John Mahon, Joseph Elliott, Taylor Davies, Paige Gisello, Fiona McMillan, Jane McDonald, Eric Folsom, Callista Makotich, and Liz Huntley-Jench. And in the second hour, we didn't, it was a big first round, and so we didn't get it, I couldn't get it all in in the first hour today. So continuing in that first round, in that March 3rd, and the Journey Continues open mic, you'll hear readings again at the Elm by Anna Johnson, Harlequin Crow, and then me. And then straight from that into the second round, you'll hear readings by Earl Collier, Jace Elliott, Blair Richards, Malcolm Nullen, Layli Jamali, Sarah Emtage, Sonali Samaya, Meg Freer, Bruce Cudmore, Val, Leo Roberts, Joseph Elliott, Jane McDonald, Callista Markotich, and again, me. And my first mention in each hour is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, and I try to preserve that as much as possible to maintain the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And what I will do here is just remind you that readings in the round are basically done at sign up. When someone signs up that they want to read, we go through that sign up list. Each person reads one poem and then sits back down, and then we move on through the list like that. Then we take an intermission after we go through it, and then we open up a second round for people that are reading again in that second round. So just so you know how it works. Anyway, here we go. And just in case you tuned in just a second or a minute or so late, coming up, you're going to hear in the first hour from the first round of the March 3rd and the Journey Continues open mic at the Elm Cafe. In that first round, readings by Malcolm Cullen, Vicky Langelier, Layli Jamali, Sarah Emtage, Michael Flaho, Leanne Terrace, Sonali Samaya, Meg Freer, Juno, Bruce Cudmore, Val, Leo Roberts, John Mahon, Joseph Elliott, Taylor Davies, Paige Gisello, Fiona McMillan, Jane McDonald, Eric Folsom, Callista Markotich, and Liz Huntley-Jench. And I may interrupt briefly at the top of the hour, but that would only be for a short station ID. Otherwise, you're going to hear it uninterrupted a few minutes into the second hour. So let's go ahead and just start it up and get the right spot here. Here we go.
Well, thank all of you for coming out. I'm just going to mention something that's going to be a little bit different tonight. A year ago, if you remember, for those of you that were here, I fell down the stairs and was injured, and Meg took over for me on almost no notice.
And Jane.
And Jane, yeah, and ran the event. And I was thinking about that yesterday, and, you know, they say energy follows thought. I fell down again yesterday.
Oh.
Not hurt as much, but my knee is pretty swollen up and stiff, and so Meg is going to be introducing everybody tonight, and I'll just start the sets and end the sets. And so let's give Meg a hand, and Jane for last time, too. I think pretty much everybody's been here before, but just so you know, this isn't a mic, it's just a recorder, and standing about this far away from it is kind of perfect. If you don't want your reading to air, just write no behind your name on the sign-up sheet, and always forget something, I'll think of it. And I'm probably have to have Meg mention it at this point, so because she's going to be up here every time now. So anyway, I'm just going to sit down and stay off the leg for a little bit, and then. But my heartfelt thanks to all of you for coming out. Give yourselves a hand. Let's bring up Malcolm Nolan.
Hey, everybody. How you been?
Good.
It's been like 4 months since I've been here. You're welcome. But I'm going to let this first poem that I'm going to read suffice as an explanation to my absence. It's called Seasonal. As the snow accumulates, so do the doubts. Water and self-loathing crystallize. The windows display black, barren scenes, or bleak, barren scenes. A reflection of my psyche. Any creative thought or impulse stolen away with the birds. Long black months in torpor. Thank you.
Let's give Malcolm another hand and bring up Vicky Langelier.
Clutching the sapling rooted in rock. Still, the stream flows on. Two dead leaves clutching the sapling rooted in rock. Still, the stream flows on.
And yes, if you have a really short poem like a haiku, read it twice. That's ideal. And let's give Vicky another hand and bring up Layli Jamali.
Good evening. I really hope that I could be that short, but unfortunately, that's not a gift given to everybody. After the blizzard, there is a yellow warning flashing on my phone. The weather is to go very bad. The sip of coffee I just pulled in tastes weird immediately. I look out of the window for the signs. Nothing but the dangling sun radiating white sharp light from among the hazy clouds. There's a snow sitting at the other side of the windowsill. And on this side sit a row of tiny metal birds stuck on a metal rod as if to be sitting on a farm fence or an electric line. I ordered them online some time ago. They were supposed to go on the wall above the sofa to cheer up the dingy room. I couldn't believe my eyes when the flock arrived. How had they managed to squeeze so many birds in a flat box? It was the size of a ruler I once used at school. But out they came of the box, chirping, staring at me with the eyes they didn't even have. What should I do, I thought? Keep them, send them back, or just throw them away? I looked at the bare wall that was to be their home. No way, I thought. They wouldn't have survived that. I spotted a narrow windowsill with just enough bay to hold a thin flat grip. And there they have been sitting since the day, watching the weather for me. In rainy days, when the sun shines mad with every swirling snowstorm, they have kept their guard, sitting imperially still, posing their majestic gestures, with wings dying to fly and hearts throbbing to soar. I understand this pounce so well because I share with them the insuppressible lust. And I know so well that birds are not made to sit still on windowsills to watch the weather for you. I do know so well that birds are not meant to live on walls or idly hung above empty love seats. They simply deserve what they deserve, even if being made of metal, even if coming to you unwantedly, at most desperate times when you had much more bigger dreams. The alarm goes on, the sweet coffee gone cold, the sun has disappeared. Why don't you just get up, open that window, and set your birds free before the blizzard hits? Thank you.
Let's give Layli another hand and bring up Sarah Emtage.
Thank you, Meg. This is a poem in progress. Awesome. Hi, Allie. Okay, this is a program that I'm trying to get ready for a fundraiser I'm performing at next month, and so it's about the place that the fundraiser is for. It's like a place called Windstone that's like a big old farmhouse where there's like community and nature walks and a lot of art stuff and house concerts and all kinds of really cool conferences and things. Kind of about, learning how to care for creation and each other and... Yeah. Anyway, so I wanted to write something that was actually about that place, and I've come up with what I have so far. And so I wanted to kind of test out what I have so far, because I want to do a little bit of, like, interactive call-and-response type stuff. So I have a repeating stanza, and I can go ahead and share that with you. And if you are game to help me out, see if this works, if we can, like, I do the first two lines, and you read the second two with me, or, as soon as you feel like you want to start chiming in, that's welcome, too. So the first, this first stanza goes so far. We are slowly spiraling soupward as the soup is being stirred. And it all began with silence, and it all began with the word. And so that's going to repeat a couple times throughout. So if, like, should I try that? So I say, we are slowly spiraling soupward as the soup is being stirred. And it all began with silence, and it all began with the word. If you feel ready to join in. Okay, so it's called Stone Soup. So we are slowly spiraling soupward as the soup is being stirred. It began with silence, and it all began with the word. Thank you. The wind hovers over the waters, and so does a skipping stone, till it slows and sinks deep in the drink, and the seed of the story is sown. The table is stretched apart at the seams and lengthened with long wooden boards. The air is humming with voices and thrumming with stories like swords. We are slowly spiraling soupward as the soup is being stirred. And it all began with silence, and it all began with the word. The sourdough has risen. It is fresh and filled with caves, crust to crumbs as it breaks for us, and the butter melts in waves. The cauldron of story is stirring, and everyone adds what they can to the wind, stone, water, and silence, and the word where it all began. For we are slowly spiraling soupward as the soup is being stirred, and it all began with silence, and it all began with the word. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. let's give Sarah another hand and bring up, is it Michael Flaho? Yes. All right. Okay.
I think every now and then there's a temptation to write a poem about this actual sort of gathering that we do. I think Pam did one once. And I didn't have much time to write this month, but I did something like that. And it's called The Astronomer. Hear me back there? The far-seeing astronomer gazes through glass of the telescope in hope of discovering new worlds, new life. In the laboratory of the mind, some experiments have worked, some colleagues have been useful, but the quest is unfulfilled. The nagging itch of curiosity and hope keep the antenna turning forever this way and that. On the dark, cold street, the astronomer gazes through a window, the mental telescope focused on this new cloud of light and the mysteries within, and discovers a new constellation of stars. The poetry of a group of readers out loud filling their space with everything a mind could hear and feel and share. To the astronomer, glass suddenly feels as a barrier, not an aid in the search. The space observed draws to travel and experience rather than observe. Opens the cafe door, instantly crosses light years, and joins the stars.
Thank you, Michael. Let's give Michael another hand and bring up Leanne Terrace.
Hi, everybody. Wow, this is great. We're bursting at the seams tonight. I took a Writers Collective of Canada creative writing course this winter, and we were always given prompts, as some of you guys might be familiar with. So this is from a 10-minute prompt we were given. The first line, I see all the armor you wear, and it's Britta Bador, dear young woman. She's a spoken word poet. From incarceration to liberty. I see all the armor you wear. You clothe yourself carefully, wearingly, layer upon layer, guarded by metal mesh, a breastplate with intricate locks to secure and shield your secret sensitive heart, a thick heavy helmet, impermeable, to cushion your vulnerable skull and shelter your persecuted mind. Not just dressed for the part, you are indeed a valiant warrior, for you have walked through fire after fire, smoldering but never becoming burned, never succumbing to those engulfing flames that flicker and lick your sweet, susceptible skin, never relinquishing the hidden core, that kernel of the very essence of yourself. Like a seedling tucked up tight in its casing, or a cherished morsel, a squirrel with foresight stashes away for the lean, cold days of winter. You keep this inner light intact, safe, preserved. That is how you came to wear all this weighty armor, protecting what is most precious, sacred. But rest assured, dear one, your luminosity still shines. You are not at war here. This is not a battleground of blood and death. For you are beautiful, beating with the pulse of life. You are free to discard all those binding and cumbersome garments. Peel layer by layer your hardened husk, like a snake shedding, sloughing off the sheath, and revealing newly naked skin. Through the accumulation of time, a gradual gathering of the years, you will keep unveiling right down to your bare bones, emancipated from the limits of the flesh, unearthed, jubilant, dancing all around in your skeleton.
Let's give Leanne another hand and bring up Sonali Samaya.
I don't like reading off my phone, but I didn't bring my book. Sorry. I also entered this in a contest, so that's cool. I don't want to talk about the contest too much because I'm going to jinx it, but this poem I like a lot. It's good, I think. I hope. It's called All Things Mundane. I see you in crooked picture frames and in lifted floorboards. I see you in suits and in stains, but don't worry, you don't cross my mind on days that don't end in Y, and I see you in hard-to-find front doors and in awkward smiles and in clocks not on time, and I'll see you in all 5 seconds of my fame, I'm sure, and everything slightly off and all things perfectly out of place. I'm quite grateful for the mistakes and fate that brought me to your gaze because you've restored my faith in the odd counts and the flexed feet, and in the slightly off, you found me. And that stop where the bus is always 5 minutes late is still our favorite place to meet, and your bar that never seems to have anything sweet has been my favorite place to drink these days. Our existence thrives, and the question is, Pepsi okay? You, I, we are slightly off in all things mundane. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonali. I'll just stay up here because I'm the next one on the list. And I've got the latest Quirks of Human Nature poster, which I will have the Elm put up for March 24th. It's the fourth Tuesday of the month this month, not the third Tuesday, because the third Tuesday is St. Patrick's Day. I've got a friend of mine from Toronto, Irina Moga, a Romanian woman, coming to do share her poetry. Deb Sherman's on piano, Jan LeClaire on accordion. If you've not heard her, you've really got to come hear Jan. We've got Laylee as one of the bonus poets. We've got Leanne as one of the bonus poets. And Dawn Sadler, who works at Novel Idea, is a third bonus poet. So it's going to be a really fun night. March 24th, Timeout Bar and Bistro, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Hopefully you can come. Oh, and Malcolm told people about his little QR code, that idea that if you have a website or a blog or something that you can, people can link to, and bring his, but I actually brought mine, and thank you, Malcolm, for the idea, so it just goes to the blog that I have to share poetry that's been published, and poems and photos and other things. This is called Desperate Times. Vines in fall splay against walls like dancers with flowing red scarves. Rowan berries have started to ferment on the trees. Tipsy cedar waxwings and grosbeaks sashay through the air after gorging themselves. Stop walking. Ignore the guy yelling, "Shut up!" out his window at the crow. Tune out the buzz of military helicopters. They're prearranged exercises, but who knows these days? Don't allow your mind to loop the opening credits music of Psycho. Stay calm. Breathe in long and deep from the pale yellow peace rose that leans over the sidewalk even this late in the year. The temperature will drop suddenly tonight. Frost will form on the rose bushes, but not on the concave parts of petals and leaves. Care for your own ribs and supports. Keep your options open. Thank you. And the next poet up is Juno. Let's give Juno a big hand.
Is that going to be okay?
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, just wait. One of them wants to take a video.
Whenever you're ready.
My poem is called Spring. Spring is coming. It's almost here. We're so excited. we all cheer. Spring is coming, it's almost here. When the caterpillars start crawling and the butterflies start flying, you will know it's spring. Oh.
Let's give Juno another hand and bring up Bruce Cudmore.
Hello. Thank you, Juno. You've inspired me. I'm going to do a poem about spring as well. Buffleheads, yes. Buffleheads, a sure sign of spring. It's called The Voice of the Bufflehead. Spring and summer are a quotation within a quotation quoted by one twice removed from the source. And cold wind ushers in clouds and blustery snow in fading sunlight. And shards of buoyant ice tinkle as wave chimes against the remaining ice sheet in the marina. And icicles are winter's bared teeth in late March. Now, a transition. Intonated by the voice of the bufflehead. Buffleheads bob past empty docks, unperturbed by the cold. Agile in treasure-laden underwater worlds, they dive for crayfish and mussels. And efficient above, they lift off the water with a beat of wings to fly as a direct quotation through the world. The drake's large white patch on the back of his head foreshadows the full sail of summer. And his striped wings are echoed by his staccato call as he ascends by thrust of black and white plumage. The hen's smaller white patches apply behind her eyes, apply distance to summer's sail. Her soft browns seem collected by her feathers from hollowed trunks where she nests. They inhabit land as well as water and sky. They are lifelong friends, changeless, through a few clutches of eggs, a few years, thousands of miles, countless fathoms, and the fertile nest from which all things changeful and constant hatch. Now the sun breaks through, revealing his iridescent mask, her hazel cloak.
Give Bruce another hand and bring up Val.
Hello. I call this poem Hangover. Cooled teapot among discarded bottles. A crystal ashtray acting as a coaster. Dry toast lies crumbling on the nightstand. Spilled milk and smeared jam crust on white sheets. My phone buzzes off its perch with neon clickbait of the night before, grainy impressions of wet lips, foggy rooms, and steadied waists. A nauseous morning of impatient metal bells. I open the curtains to let the light in, then hide my head beneath the heavy covers, my alarm trembling the rented walls. The lonely hearts are never mine. Their decisions are poor, mine follows suit. I wake beside a pounding head. Have me punished. Let it implode.
Let's give Val another hand and bring up Leo Roberts.
Hey, Core Gang.
All right. Elmi's Journeyman, International Women's Day is in 5 days. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. I wouldn't exactly be a feminist if I got that wrong. this piece is in honor of my mom and her gross kale smoothies. 2016. Mom made a kale smoothie today. Banana, soy, chia seed, ginger. I choke on the loquacious ooze. It goes down, but it still feels like the wrong way. Feel for the growing teenage mind, she says. And this teenage mind swats thoughts of vomit and contemplates the nature of love. 2026. I pick out organic kale at a grocery store and wonder at the yuppies and yoga instructors that have stood here before me. I throw it in a pan, spill in some ground beef, toss together some kind of dinner to repair this tired adult mind. As I struggle to eat a vegetable every day, I remember my mother's love.
Let's give Leo another hand and bring up John. Is it Mahon or Mahon?
It's
Mahon. Mahon. Mahon.
Hello, everyone. I've written and submitted poetry before, but this is honestly the first time I've shared it beyond drunkenly with friends at bars. I moved to Kingston from Ireland 7 weeks ago, and I was here exactly 4 weeks ago, where I was told by four people that I should write something and perform. And it was about 3 weeks ago I realized I was 1 month through my 24 months of my work permit, which equates to 4.16%. It adds up to 4.16%, a temporal calculus in my mind. All that I dare hope, is it worthy spent? Discover home and bask in pair of years' rent. Sojourn time whirls faster, past days I find. It adds up to 4.16%. Adore this snowy paradise I'm lent. Mine open heart was enveloped in kind. All that I dare hope, is it worthy spent? Letters from home and farewells truly meant. Endless trials, doubtful paths serpentined. It adds up to 4.16%. Will I return home unbroken but bent? This journey's worth and outcomes I am blind. All that I dare hope, is it worthy spent? Peel mornings slow and deep nights decadent. Yesterday snow falls and today's sun shined. It adds up to 4.16%. All that I dare hope, is it worthy spent?
Yeah. Let's give John another hand and bring up Joseph Elliott.
So happy there was another haiku tonight, and it was such a beautiful one, and soon you're all going to be writing them, I hope. I've read a few here before about my oldest daughter and her encounters with the healthcare system. I feel like I've maybe given an impression that things are more tragic than they are. She's okay. It's just an ongoing challenge. So when I read about them, we're fine, but it's... You got to write about it, right? So I had some feedback that maybe things were more dire than they really are. But with that in mind, I did write another one because it's what my life is right now. So, children's clinic, the things she thinks are normal. Children's clinic, the things she thinks are normal. Thank you.
Give Joseph another hand and bring up... Darn it. No, Taylor Davies.
I did not think I was next. I just wanted to start by saying that Poetry Night every month, but specifically over this winter... has been like a beacon. I look forward to it every single month. Every time I leave here, I'm like, God, I can't wait till the next month. And it's been so cool to see it get like so full. Like, it's really nice to see. So I'm gonna read something that I wrote this afternoon. So it's not perfect, but I don't know if everyone knows, but there was a lunar eclipse this morning, and so that's where it came from. Oh, and I don't have my thing open. There we go. Okay. The Earth eclipsed the moon before I woke today. I've since risen, my eyelashes weighed down with sleep, and a new and constant suspicious awe. A door blew open last year, unfamiliar light laid out onto the quietest forces of the world that I'd somehow never noticed. The crescent in the clear sky this morning is too different from the perfect coin I saw last night. Too westerly, too red. I wonder if there's some secret language being spoken that I can never understand. I watch the sliver grow thinner and thinner until it's gone from view, until it's just a dent in the sky, a shadowy afterimage. What else is happening while I'm asleep, while I'm spinning? What don't I notice that would carry on whether I knew of it or not? If the moon is eclipsed while I'm asleep, would I ever know it had once disappeared?
Let's give Taylor another hand and bring up Paige, is it Chirolo?
Chisolo.
Chisolo. Thank you.
So a little bit of context. I'm in the fine arts program at Queen's and have therefore taken a lot of art history classes. And I remember learning that the reason that we picture heaven to be in the clouds was because Raphael came up with that and painted it for the first time. And so now we picture heaven in the clouds because someone decided that's where it was. So this is called Raphael's Clouds for Heaven. Blindly I follow an invisible string tied to the toe of all that is inevitable. I share no faith and I sleep in on Sundays. He has never heard my voice, no pleads or prayers to the sky, for heaven did not sit in the clouds until man decided so. In aged oil and colored varnish, one master's Madonna carries your faith in the cradle of her arms, while I hold on to fate tightly with completely empty hands, for I can paint clouds too.
Let's give Paige another hand and bring up Fiona McMillan.
Hello, everyone. For the first time ever, I have something to plug, which I'm so excited about. I am doing a reading. I'm a Queen student, and I'm doing a reading on March 19th, which is like 2 weeks and a bit. It's a Thursday, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Theological Hall. If anyone knows Queen's campus, it's a beautiful building, and I'm very excited. I have these little invites that I'm going to leave up here, so please, please grab. Thank you. And it got me thinking. I don't know if it's just something in the air or the fact that there's so many people here tonight, but I'm feeling like very emotional about this event specifically, and I wanted to speak a little bit before I actually read. But I've been writing since I was young, and I always thought poetry was like innately super embarrassing and something you should never admit that you do. And then when I got into undergrad, I went through like some crazy stuff in my first year, came back in my second year, and I just felt this urge that I like needed to read these things that I had kept hidden for so long to people. So I signed up for my first reading, and I pretty much like begged. It's represented by the Union Gallery, which is a gallery at Queen's campus. I like begged them to let me do a show, and they were like way sweeter than they had to be, because I was like no one and still am not published or anything at all, but I was very just adamant, and I begged and pleaded, and it worked. And I did my first show, and I was so nervous, and I'll never forget how great it felt to say these out loud and to look people in their eyes and have them hear them on purpose and not be have it be this like thing that you do in dark crowded rooms or when you're drunk at a bar, but do it on purpose. And then I heard about this event from a friend, actually Snolly in the back, from our poetry class that we took at Queens, which I hated that class, but I loved you. And she told me about this thing, and she was kind of like, everything that you seem to like about writing, that can exist outside of a school, and there's this cafe, and it's like not on Princess Street, and you walk just a little bit further, but it's worth it. And coming here has honestly been like one of the highlights of my undergrad experience at Queens, and reading them to people that don't know me or owe me anything has meant so much. So you're all like little celebrities in my head, even though you're very real people and we know each other now, which is very exciting. But anyways, yeah, it's meant so much to me, and I'm graduating in a couple months, so I hate the thought of not being here anymore, but I'm really excited about this, and it would mean so much to have any of your faces exist in that university setting. That was a very long spiel. Thank you so much. I am actually going to read something also. This is an older one, but I quite like it. Okay. It's called You Are a Kind of Angel. You told me the reason I could not stop thinking about him was because I had not had any other romantic stimulation since then. You told me that he was the only experience I had had that year, the only thing connected to love or dating since September, and that's why I felt so stuck on him. No other reason. Not his shit-colored brown eyes, or the fact that he verbally says oy vey at least once an hour, or how connected he states he is to his incoming Jew-fro. No, none of this was what made him stand out. It was timing. Sheer timing, accessibility, and convenience. A modern-day recipe for disaster. It always comes down to the two hands now, doesn't it? And not the veiny pale kind you would expect a young woman like myself to be writing prose about. He said it took him all summer to work up the tan he had lost in 2 weeks, and I held in a laugh as I gazed down at my own olive pores. He asked me how long it took to curate my own complexion, and I reminisced on that one time I went outside. He looked as if he wanted to cry, and I looked like I wanted him to kiss me. It's funny how two people can be in the same room, same bed, same moment even, but be so mentally far away. I don't think we could have found a shared thought if our lives depended on it that night, outside of how good we would have looked standing beside one another. I think Spencer is mostly straight, whereas I am just a little bit, and I think Spencer is mostly unsure of himself, where I am just a little bit. You would think this made us have more in common, but these parallels did not connect us in the way I had so desperately hoped. In fact, they only pulled us further apart. Spencer sends me Hall & Oates songs every few weeks, and I go back and forth on whether I should respond. He says he's not ready for a relationship, but was drawn to me from the moment we met, and thinks I'm beautiful and funny and kind. I think that if he felt all those things, he would be with me, but to each their own, I guess. I hate when people have different opinions than me, because I spend so much of my life crafting them. How I feel about things, what shade of red is too bright, and what the proper undertone of blonde hair should be in a painting. I do not say things lightly ever, really, so when someone challenges me, I can't help but take it to heart. For it is from this heart, it is from deep inside me and then some. These words have not just been spewed, but crafted, mulled over, edited, reconsidered, and reconciled again before being released into the light of day. I don't take any of this lightly, because I don't take myself lightly. So how dare you ask me if I am sure about that last one? I am sure about everything I have ever said and then some. Thank you.
Let's give Fiona another hand and bring up Jane McDonald. All right, I'm going back and forth between the one I wrote this morning or the one that's been worked on a bit. I'm going to read the one I wrote this morning. It's, I'll see how it lands as I read it. I can see it needs work. Eric, don't judge me. Sorry, Eric. Eric's my poetry. Anyway, I'll stop. Okay, let's start reading your poem now, Jane. Okay, good. It's called Rabbit. 2 days ago, red blood on white snow, and the sweeping wings left marks. The body whose head on the end of its neck pointed at its tail, and what is that ropey loop on the snow? Her tracks
scored the yard. Every day this month, more tracks, and her enemy, her fate, knew where to find her. A bald fact, a rabbit, her body's purse rifled and dropped to the ground. And the morning after, what did the squirrel make of her? The heap of her, her blood on the snow oxidized and brown, the black squirrel who ran and stopped, head swiveled and looked, two beats of a heart, then continued. And this morning she is odd gray tufts, small strokes on the snow, rounded like cupped hands, like tied notes, like the liaison mark from consonant to vowel, the marks on snow inscribed by her ears or her back legs dangling from the mouth of a fox, jolting and swaying, running notes that lead to the building over there. And now, beside, the blue shadows lie on sun dazzle, a forsythia tangle on a page of white. Birds' shadow selves hop among the shadow branches. They snip and eat, bark, small nubs, cold remnants must suffice.
Give Jane another hand and bring up Eric Fulton.
Yeah, what am I supposed to do? You got an answer for that.
Sorry, Eric.
Oh, I'm in trouble now. So this is kind of not seasonal. It's a bit of a Thanksgiving poem. It's another in that series that I've been writing about, you know, me growing up in the USA. So we start in the 1960s, but then we go back to the 1620s. And there's probably a lot more I should explain, but you're on your own. The hat of Constance Hopkins. The two students who got the best history marks in grade 8 earned the prize of a day trip by bus south beyond Boston to Plymouth, Massachusetts. The chance to see firsthand a place we had studied. The itinerary took us to Plymouth Rock, inert, protected in its civic enclosure, and a tour of the replica Mayflower II, so new back then, it seemed almost freshly painted. Three-masted, high-sterned, about 25 feet wide. When packed with a full load of passengers and crew, she must have felt crowded like an old red schoolhouse, fidgety and noisy, bobbing on the ocean. The Grand Flourish was a reconstructed village, Plymouth Plantation, at the eastern edge of town. Modern Plymouth sits on the original, so the mock settlement dwells in a different place, but close enough in geographical feeling. Long, wind-swept slope down to brilliant salt water. Blue horizon naked all the way to Cape Cod. Good sight lines to the brook, the forest pushed well back. The land was once cleared by the Wampanoag people. Their garden plots awaited some future planting. The few epidemic survivors moved away. Wind and rain mourned above the hastily dug graves. The saints built a saw pit, erected rough dwellings, conjured a dozen houses from planks and labor. The word pilgrim arrived 200 years later. They were Brownists way back when, or separatists, saints elected of God, the Calvinist chosen, although their journey required others with skills, such as sailors and the old soldier Miles Standish, servants, carpenters, those referred to as strangers. The company was split roughly 50-50 into saints and strangers, which is where I come in. Descended from 14-year-old Constance Hopkins, who sailed with her adventurous father, Stephen. Stephen Hopkins was a survivor of Jamestown, a guy with a knack for avoiding starvation. The only person who spoke any Algonquin. Calm negotiator, a friend to the natives. He also kept a tavern, enraged to the elders, who claimed he allowed folks to drink on the Sabbath. He even permitted the playing of shovelboard. For such debauchery, required to pay a fine. Those were my people, the strangers among the saints. Far from the lace-wearing, clean-linen gentlefolk, serving turkey and pie at the Thanksgiving feast. There's no garden if you can't get your hands dirty. At Pilgrim Hall, Plymouth, they have a hat on display, which was once the possession of Constance Hopkins. A brown felted beaver, tall with a rounded crown, more like Mother Goose than the buckled pilgrim hat. And if our convenient mythologies won't tell the truth about hats, what good are they really? The ragged brim shades the eyes of the gardener. We board the bus to drive home to our families.
Let's give Eric another hand and bring up Calista Markovic.
Story, local story. One of the protagonists is my husband. He's always finding himself in these stories. It's called Moment of Grace, and it is for our daughter-in-law. Brooke is her name. Moment of Grace. There are days when Brooke's last patient leaves, frail and valiant, and she gathers her stuff and runs for the ferry, her backpack bumping her shoulder blades, and sees that boat has sailed. If he is informed of a day like this, he goes there in the getaway car to get her there. While he waits, he plans fast get-there ploys. Kinetic. He is Jack Rabbit, and this day, muscle bunched like a question mark. What's this gait of hers? He watches her amble, flaneurial by the beds of impatience and flocks. She extracts her sunglasses from her pocket, puts them on, the rays of the late sun oblique and golden upon her. She lowers a casual hand to brush the white spike of a hosta. She moves so her sensible hospital scrubs flutter soft blue, sweet and easy as breeze, nonsensing his plan to surge through yellow lights, zigzag downtown, mount curbs and medians to get her there before the boat glides silently off. Passengers who made it smiling from the upper deck. Look, she's raising her face to the paling sky, disclosing her day's long story. Should he honk? He doesn't honk. Is he a jackass? For once inside the getaway car, she says, that was my last patient, the man who was walking ahead of me. In the rearview mirror, Jack Rabbit sees that man. That man's body winces with every step. His hand clutches the hot pink cancer parking pass they hand out for repeat treatment. Even the chary eye of a jackrabbit sees his weary, stoop-shouldered effort. She says, I couldn't rush past him. In the rearview mirror, Jack Rabbit looks at his own dark, one-minded eye. It leers back at him, a menace of pent-up haste. Jack Rabbit blinks at the fragile world, slows the Jack Rabbit getaway car, yields, lets pedestrians cross.
Let's give Calista another hand and bring up Liz Huntley Yen. So I'm going to start again with a little plug. As lots of you know, I've started this series in the West End because the West End also needs some poetry. It's called Common Language. Our next event will be on March 21st. It takes place at Grains and Goods Coffee Bar. I'm going to steal Fiona's description. It's not on Princess. You just have to walk a little bit. But first you have to go to the West End and then walk a little bit. And we'll have some of our Elm Cafe favorites there. Jane McDonald will be reading some poems. Joseph Elliott, will be giving us a sprinkling of haiku throughout. I also have Larry Scanlon, who's a local author. He'll be reading from a play excerpt that he's working on. And I will be reading some poems from what is now a little chapbook, actually. Yay! This is my dictionary of accuracies and inventions. The cover photo is a pile of dirty diapers, so you can guess what that's about. I have some posters here that I will leave. You're welcome to grab one if you are interested. And a poem. So I'm working on this project about motherhood, and I'm kind of looking at all different ways of using writing to talk about one thing. So this one, I mean, it's a poem, but I'm stealing from a whole bunch of, like, Catholic liturgy, basically. I hope that some of it is familiar to you, and also I hope that it offends no one. We shall see. It's called Hail Mary. Holy is thy shining face, thy sweat-beaded forehead, holy thy prolapsed pelvic floor, gold, frankincense, myrrh, baby shower gift registry, ischial spines parting in a red sea. Holy art thou who does not slumber, thy sweet babe in the crook of your arms, digital clocks haloed glow, 3:01 a.m., 4:16 a.m., 5:23 a.m., tick-tock, doom-scrolling through the gospel of influencers, dreams kept in abeyance. Officium divinum, in the name of the first son, the second son, and the third son. Look, mama, look, lift thine eyes up to the child leaping from the sofa to the floor. Again, mama, look, again, looping like rosary beads, liturgy of the slow ticking minutes, Tonka truck processional. And you must keep the ordinances, immaculate kitchen, even song, beer bottle confessional. In all utterances and testimony, our wish is your command. Holy, holy, holiest of holes in the heart, blessed is the fruit of thy Costco purchase, devoured entirely within minutes of unpacking the shopping bags. Prepareth a table, a plate, spoon, sippy cup, pabulum, breast laid bare, no less utilitarian than the woody ridges of a pine cone, no more sensual than a dandelion. Take, eat, this is your body, broken. And you, virginal as a white tablecloth, may your own bowl ever be empty of desire. Tradwife, train wreck, we are called to witness. Sweet baby Jesus dumps an entire jar of dried beans on the floor while his brothers are fighting in the living room like they legitimately want to kill each other. And you, shepherd and chauffeur, shouting, get in the car now, you'll be late for school. But they just carry on doing whatever the hell they want as though you don't exist. God, you could smack them. Blessed the violence in your throat when your childless 25-year-old coworker complains of being so tired. A special corner of damnation reserved for the ones who said, I don't have kids, but I have dogs, so. Swallow platitudes as your daily